The scope of this law is extremely broad. The more social interaction now with the increasing digitization of our society, this law is applicable everywhere.
Hello, and welcome to Exploring Digital Spheres. My name is Wouter Bernhard, and in this episode I'm talking with Max von Grafenstein. Max followed an interesting path toward his digital studies. Initially working in the film industry, he became a lawyer, and then got involved trying to protect data.
I didn't understand the concept of data. I didn't understand why should data be protected per se.
In this show, we talk about data protection, and maybe more important, the protection of the autonomous individual. We're also speaking about the brand new GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation. Max is both researcher and consultant, and in this capacity, understands both how laws like the GDPR came into being, and at the same time looks how laws like these are implemented by coming up with data protection certificates and behavioral guidelines. But before we dive into all of that, Max, could you please explain why we're having this conversation in a small cellar-like corner of the Institute?
Maybe to start things off, you can talk to me about what this day is today, because when we are trying to make an appointment, Florian said, oh, it's going to be super busy, everybody's going to be here. And you said, oh, are you going to be here for the Tagesklausurrundgang? I was like, I have no idea what that is. Yeah, could you maybe explain what that is?
Yeah, the Klausurtagung. So this is just the internal institution-wide conference at the Alexander von Humboldt Institute for Internet and Society. And this is very important because it's one of the rare occasions where all the different researchers come together and actually hear what the others are doing. And since we say, hey, we are doing interdisciplinary research, it's never bad to hear what the others are actually doing.
Maybe we can start by talking a bit about you and your research. I was reading a little bit on the Innovation and Law website, and what I found interesting is you might not have thought that you were going to be, when you were a kid, somebody who would be making objective normative scales in order to measure data protection risks. I cannot imagine how you as a 12-year-old think like, yeah, that's something I will be focusing on, you know? How did you eventually, like, what is your path? How did you eventually came to do this?
Okay, so this was quite a random path, actually. So what I wanted to do always as a boy was to build things, so very hands-on. So I wanted to build cars, and then I wanted to build houses, being an architecture, and then I
actually physical things.
Yeah, really physical things. Then it got more digital or non-physical. Then I wanted to become a movie maker. And finally, there were so many different things that I asked myself, working at the German film set, what am I doing here? And I was really lacking some intellectual inspiration or a barrier where I could, sharpen my mind. I couldn't sleep anymore at night, so because I was disappointed and I was also desperate in a way, because I thought I'm in a one-way direction for my life, and it narrows down my possibilities I could do later on. And I was always interested in doing so much stuff, and I thought, okay, I stuck in this film idea, and I have to do something else. So what really breaks up everything, and this was then law, ironically. The first thing or astonishing thing is was that I found out that law actually was, or studying law and now doing law, was for me at least more creative than only working at a film set. I don't say that this is objectively the case, but for me it was the case. And then nevertheless, of course I worked as a lawyer in the film industry, and then the digitization really became very strong and apparent in our societies. And then not only copyright law became more and more important, but also data protection law. And data protection law was, in contrast to copyright law, a law where I didn't understand the purpose. So I didn't understand what this law is actually going to protect. I didn't understand the concept of data. I didn't understand why should data be protected per se. And so I thought, okay, now I have really go one step back into research again and writing my PhD thesis about this strange thing, data protection law.
Do you now, after having studied data protection, do you now understand it better, or do you think there's still, like, it's still a very abstract field to be working in?
Yeah, so at least me, I understand it much better. But surprisingly, I think I can also explain it better, at least to friends. So I think this is something like a lackmus test. It's really like a test now, whether I'm able, after 7 years of studying, or writing my PhD thesis and doing further research, whether I'm really able to do it. So for me, the interesting thing was that, in my opinion, it's all about the object of protection of data protection law. Okay, what does this law actually want to protect? And first of all, it's of course not data. Yeah, because data, it's more like a legal technical thing why the legislator said, okay, let's tie our regulation instruments into data. But in fact, there are other more substantial values behind that should be protected by data protection law. And first of all, this is of course the individual autonomy. Yeah, because the legislator think that autonomy by individuals might be threatened because of the automated processing of personal data.
And what does it mean that your autonomy is threatened?
Yeah, this means that you aren't able anymore, as before in the analog world, to conduct in a freely non-biased manner. But of course, and this is the main problem, I mean, what does autonomy really mean? And if you take this as an object of protection, yeah, how can this help you define as a lawyer or as a data subject to say, hey, in this context, the processing of personal data is allowed or not, or yes, but only under these conditions. So, and the result is the concept of autonomy is far too broad to give these precise criteria. So, one of the main other outcomes of my research was to narrow down the concept of autonomy. And you can do this. It's not the only way, but I think a very promising way is to refer, for example, to fundamental rights of the data subject. So because if you look as a lawyer, you always look at the basic law or at the fundamental rights. And then in many fundamental rights regimes, it always starts with the concept of autonomy, or also called individual dignity. And then this very broad concept is specified by many other fundamental, more specific fundamental rights, for example, like rights to privacy. Privacy, and then again specified, rights to privacy at home, rights to privacy while using communications, privacy in public, etc., etc. Or beside the rights to privacy, you have fundamental rights to freedom, for example, the fundamental right to find an occupation, or the fundamental right to conduct a business, or the fundamental right to exercise your freedom of thought and religion. Whatever, or even yet another category of fundamental rights, for example, to judicial remedy, a remedy and a fair trial, or yet another category, fundamental rights to non-discrimination. Yeah, so we have many, many, many different, very specific guarantees enshrined in our constitution. And in my opinion, these can help very nicely to specify the broad concept of autonomy, and referring to these more specific fundamental rights helps us finally to define, okay, which context is actually legally relevant and how do we have to, well, regulate the processing of personal data in these contexts.
Now, of course, you're talking about the autonomy has to be protected, right, in many ways. Yeah. I'd like to maybe talk a little bit about how it can be violated, this autonomy, because of course we talk about data, you talk about all these fundamental rights, but if we don't understand how data and the maybe harvesting of data can be a violation of your rights, then who cares about whether it's protected or not? And I saw there's a couple of examples that you had. You're doing this research project, innovation in law, and one of the categories there is the smart car. I would like to maybe start by what kind of data is actually collected by this smart car of you that might in some way infringe your fundamental rights.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if we take the example of smart cars, I would say, okay, this is a use case. And now we can ask, okay, and in which way might autonomy be violated or threatened just by the collection and processing of personal data, yeah, within or by smart cars? And this is where it starts, because of course you could say it's also a conceptual question. Yeah, if you say, hey, it's there is already a violation of autonomy if somebody is not allowed to precisely decide on whether it reveals personal data or not, and for which purpose this data is processed, yeah, then you can immediately say, okay, this is already the violation of autonomy. But in my opinion, this is far too abstract, and it's more about that you really refer to these more specific guarantees, yeah, provided for by the fundamental rights, for example, that you say, hey, you really have to look at where this data is collected. So is it at home? No, because it's in your car. However, your car can somehow be protected. Yeah, it's something like a semi-public sphere. So this is one thing. And then the question is, and how is this data now used? For example, is this only used in order to show you how to drive somewhere so that you can avoid a traffic jam? Yeah? Then there is no negative impact on you. But of course, if the same data is used in order to fine you because it is automatically tracked how quick you drive somewhere, for example, in a speed limit zone, yeah, and then you are fined, then you can immediately see, hey, maybe there is some threat, yeah, for your right to a fair trial if this data is used in a way where you cannot object, or where you cannot rectify the data, or where you cannot explain the whole situation from another angle. However, what I want to say with this example is that it's really not about just disclosing data or not. Yeah, it's not as simple as that, but it's really about how the data is used and what rights or instruments the data subject or me as a driver of a smart car have in order to defend myself against an unfair treatment of the data.
You already spoke a bit about the GDPR. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit maybe about the balance of power, who gets to decide what is law and what is not, and who benefits from making these laws? Because I can understand there is not a broad consensus about what kind of rights you actually have and how they should be implied. Could you maybe talk a little bit about, maybe start by explaining what the GDPR actually is?
So this is the acronym for EU General Data Protection Regulation. And this is the new law which has become applicable 25th May 2018. And it regulates the processing of personal data. Yeah, and now the question is, as an academic, you can ask, hey, how should a new law be shaped so that this new law, like the GDPR, perfectly balances the different interests, yeah, on the data processing, in the data processing economy?
Because between different interests, between, for example, a business that is collecting the data and the government trying to regulate all of this.
Yeah, or rather, let's say, between the data subjects, like us as consumers or citizens or whatever, and then the data processing entities, which can be private entities like a credit agency or Google or Facebook or the next small bakery which set up its website, yeah, whoever, or the state, yeah, because also the state process personal data, and everybody has its own interests. So individuals seeking to be protected, yeah, at least their autonomy, and then the business interests of the economy, and the state interest of the public authorities, and this law tried to balance all these different interests.
Sounds like a nightmare.
Well, actually, this is what each law has to go through such a nightmare. But regarding the GDPR, there was really a special challenge. And this special challenge was that there were 28 different member states which had to come to an agreement about the object of protection. What do we want what do we actually want to protect with this law, and how do we do it? And here now the problem was that each member state had an other understanding of data protection or privacy or Privatheit, yeah, whatever you name it. Yeah, there are so many different concepts out there. And there's also a second reason why this has been a nightmare. And this is because, I mean, the scope of this law is extremely broad, which means that the more social interaction now with the increasing digitization of our society is based on the processing of data, yeah? Now given this this broad definition, then you can see that this law is applicable everywhere.
And you see this as a good thing?
Well, yes. Yeah, that's very difficult to answer this question. Is it good or bad? So you can even, you could ask a little bit more precisely, is this law functioning?
Is it functioning?
There I have to say, well, it could function if interpreted right. But of course, now all the conceptual confusion, which was going on during the legislation process, just continues now, but now in the application phase. And now there is the switch. Yeah, a little bit, you can make here the switch between being an academic who asked the question, hey, how should this law be shaped? And now you could go into the application and ask as a lawyer, for example, okay, how should we interpret this law and to make it applicable?
Maybe as a last question, so you started this project or this website, this initiative called Innovation in Law. What is your aim with this particular initiative?
Yeah, this is a very nice question because this tackles a little bit like the last piece of the picture we were trying to draw in this podcast, because it refers, actually, it tries to address a problem which arises also because of the digitization. Because at least this is an assumption, we just say, hey, the digitization, of course, this makes much more things more feasible, yeah, and it's easier, so I can Skype with my cousin in Mexico, etc. But what we haven't realized so clearly in the last 20 years was that also the complexity of the socio-technical systems in which all the IT infrastructure lies is embedded, etc. And this is much more complex than before. And the problem of this complexity is that it's moving so quickly. So because of its innovative capacity, and if we talk about innovation, then the big question is that the big thing is that we actually do not know what we are talking about, because what will be the innovation? Nobody knows. And this knowledge uncertainty is the biggest challenge for everybody of us, not only us as consumers or citizens, but also for the private companies, and even for the legislator. Though a big question was, so if the General Data Protection Regulation wants to protect individual autonomy against the risks that are caused by the processing of personal data, or let's say by data-driven innovation, the question is, how should this be done if we do not know what the next innovation will be? And this was one of the biggest challenges, and the result was that normally laws are drafted in a very specific way. Normally you say you have a conditional if then sentences. So you say, hey, regulation addressee, if you do this, then there will be a specific legal consequence. But you can only go for this regulatory approach if you have sufficient knowledge. And if you don't know what's really going to happen, you can't use this approach, and you have to use much broader legal terms or even legal principles, which give much more room for interpretation, so you can tackle and adapt the interpretation to the future innovation. But in the same time, it increases massively legal uncertainty, because nobody knows how to interpret that right. And this is one of the reasons of the huge outcry, which started with the GDPR last year, because the scope is so broad and nobody knows how to apply it. Yeah. But the legislator has actually seen this problem and has complemented this very open approach, open toward innovation, by a so-called co-regulation strategy. And this means that co-regulation instruments, for example, like certification mechanisms or codes of conducts, enable the data controllers to specify the very broad conditions on its own by negotiating with the data protection authorities how this should be done. So it's this co-regulatory approach requires the data controller to much more proactively define itself the precise conditions of the law. Yeah, and this is a very complex issue. And what we are doing with this startup is we are trying to help companies or data protection, whoever, to set up these certification mechanisms or codes of conduct, because I really think, okay, this, if the GDPR shall work, this is the way how it might work.
So what you're trying to do is create some clarity for some of the parties that will be involved in the GDPR.
Very nice. So a long text delivered by me, and a very brief and precise summary given by you. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Max von Gravenstein. More information about his research is findable in the show notes of this week's episode. And as always, if you're interested in learning more about digital projects, or if you want to visit one of the Higgs events, visit hiig.de. If you enjoyed listening to Max and you want to hear more conversations like these, let us know. Send us a message or tweet at Higg Berlin. Also, we'd very much appreciate if you could leave us a rating on iTunes. It'll help other people interested in digital themes find the show. For now, this was Exploring Digital Spheres. Catch you on the flip side.